The Drive at 5 rolls on here. Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio. I'm going to change things up and do things a little bit interesting today with this top 5 at 5. LSU had a record day in concessions at Tiger Stadium on Saturday night against Florida with $1.175 million in gross sales in general seating areas only. Number one on the list, 54,794 beer or wine drinks sold. That's a lot. That's a lot of beer. Two people, 25,000. This does not include the private areas, Davey.
Dang.
Or the nice areas up on top of the stadium.
54,794. Yeah, I mean, it's close to $750,000 just in beer.
So, 52,840 waters and sodas. This is number two.
They sold how many?
52,840 water / sodas.
Golly.
Number three, 11,723 hot dogs. Number four, 6,107 things of popcorn. And number five, 5,997 burgers. They also sold 8,592 nachos. This does not include premium areas, clubs, and suites, which are serviced by another vendor. That was according to Aramark. So now you know why everybody wants to get in the beer game. Pretty much, they made about $1 million off alcohol Saturday night.
If you're having to put fan bases up against each other, which fan base in the SEC do you think could outdrink the other fan bases?
LSU versus everybody.
See, that's what I'm kind of thinking.
Versus LSU. Tennessee.
North Carolina made $1 million in the first three games. Over the first three games.
We were talking about which fan base could go toe-to-toe with LSU drink for drink.
Yeah.
In Tennessee. That's just historically speaking. Tennessee people
you
like to drink.
Pretty sloppy in Gainesville, man.
They're lightweights down there. That and almost my entire life, the only two states where stuff would be legal, I mean, they'd be outlawed. The only two states I think where you could still buy Everclear, Tennessee and Louisiana.
God. Oh, I did that. Whatever. That was a bad experiment. One time, Everclear and a watermelon.
It's good stuff, man.
Yeah, I know. Hey, I'm throwing an extra one. Jalen Ramsey is now healed. He does not have a back problem, and he's ruled eligible for the game on Sunday.
It's been a miraculous recovery for young Mr. Ramsey.
Went through that Benny Hinn, got slapped with a coat. All of a sudden, he's healed.
Now, what do you think? Somebody asked us this the other day. Do we think he was going to be with L.A. long term? Now, they didn't renegotiate his contract.
Not as of right now, I don't believe so. I know they're going to have to spend a lot to keep him, but I don't think you're going to give up that much draft capital to not re-sign him.
It's almost like what Anthony Davis did with the Lakers. He didn't sign an extension with him. He just signed, you know, his agreement. But did sign long term. The Eagles players are pissed off because they knew that they had Jalen Ramsey in the bag, and they let it go. And the Rams came in and gave a little bit more. A couple of Eagles players were quoted in an article, not personally, but they hid under the anonymity. So, not a good look. I mean, whatever, Philadelphia was trying to do something.
Yeah.
And not a good look for Jalen Ramsey either. Like, we don't need the BS back and forth between him and Sean saying, oh, my back's hurt. Oh, I got to do this. Oh, I got to do that. Just say, hey, look, we're not in agreement right now. I ain't playing until I get traded.
Right now, this is the final year of his contract before they could opt to use the player option, which if you're drafted in the first round, you get that fifth-year option.
Yeah.
But that right now would put him at the fifth-year option, $13.7 million
he's giving
for that year.
13% of that to the state of California.
So after that, he's an unrestricted free agent. So they'll look to sign him long-term from there.
Jeez, man. I don't know. At least he stayed away from the fire in the mid-state. Let's go to the phone lines. T-Cart, what up, buddy? Good afternoon to you.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Y'all doing okay?
Yeah, doing good.
Good stuff. Trey, I've been waiting to talk to you a few weeks about this. I watched Bubba Wallace and that Charlotte race where they had that weird 90-degree turn. Him and that other guy got into it a little bit. And that I can't remember what his name was. But
Alex Bowman?
He was saying – Yeah, what's up with Bubba and Alex Bowman? Like that? What's up with that?
They just, I don't know. Bowman was getting into him on the first lap and wrecked him and Austin Dillon. And Bubba was giving him the bird for a couple laps, and all of a sudden Bowman didn't like that, so he spun him. And
I was waiting for Bubba to spin him back.
No, he wasn't going to do that because they had a good race car. They could have got a good finish that day. So he'll hold off. He'll wait. I don't know if he'll get him back now, but I feel if Bowman was standing up in his race car after the race, Bowman would have, you know, he'd probably been popped in the mouth. But that's just racing. Everybody loves stuff like this. That's NASCAR for you.
Well, I enjoy it. I like the fact that they're letting them race a little bit and they're changing things up. So that's actually bringing me back into it. So.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, man. What else you got, buddy, before we get Christopher Smith on?
Yeah, brother. If I'm Tennessee, do you start Maurer? Do you even let him play? Honestly, I don't think you do. I think you run Garantano out there and you run the game plan is run the ball until they stop it. If they stop it three and out, fine. But
when we ran him out there against Georgia, and Georgia's defense is a lot scarier than Alabama's is this year as far as headhunters and, you know.
Buddy, but you just maniacs. Said it. We're going to lose by 55.
Yeah, they're just going to bomb us.
Get him killed. There's no reason to get him hurt.
I think last weekend it was actually a neck sprain. And
right.
If anything, it was a very, very slight concussion for him to be practicing on Sunday, practicing on Monday and Tuesday. Riley Locklear got a concussion a week and a half ago against Georgia, and the guy ain't playing this weekend. So there's a big difference in what he got compared to what Brian Maurer got.
I guess the reason why I'm saying what I'm saying is there's no reason to get the guys hurt. Basically, try your best to almost treat this like a preseason game. You know you're going to get killed. Don't even try to go out there and out-scheme these guys. Basically, just try to run the clock out and get out of there with no one hurt. That's my opinion on it. But
it's going to be a good game plan, buddy. T-Carp, thanks for calling, man. I appreciate it. Have a good week. Let's go to the phone lines. Christopher Smith from my bookie joins us this afternoon. Christopher, hey, brother, how are you?
Hey, Trey, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm here, man. How's everything going with you? You good? Making a little you made some money last night off my Jags, didn't you?
No play last night, and it was my first losing week of the season in college football last weekend, so I'm eager to get into the games this weekend and finally make some money again.
Where are we starting at? I mean, college football-wise, are we starting tonight? Are you looking at something tonight with Louisiana Lafayette and Arkansas State and UCLA Stanford, or are you holding off till, you know, maybe the weekend?
I'm holding off. I think the UCLA Stanford game is just so tough. You're talking about potentially UCLA's number two quarterback against Stanford's number three quarterback, and good luck trying to figure that one out. I definitely think Lafayette is the lean if I had to play one tonight, just because they're coming off their first loss of the season, and I still think they're a really, really good team. And if people just watched them once, and it was last week, maybe the public is pushing some value on them. But I am mostly going to be betting on Saturday games this week, and the ones that I'm betting on in the SEC, not many, but the one thing that's worked all year that I'm going to be on this week is the hashtag Fade Vandy train.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. What, Missouri's like, what, a 23-point favorite, something like that?
They're 21. I think they've gone up to as high as 21.5, back down to 21 now. I got them at 17 on Sunday, and I would even play them at 21 if you haven't played them there yet. They have not covered a single spread this year. They're one of only three teams in FBS that fits that category. And Missouri actually is sort of underrated nationally. Like, if you look at a lot of the analytics sites that I really like, like SP Plus with ESPN now, it has Missouri as a top 10 team. Now you think about, you know, Georgia or Alabama or Ohio State against Vanderbilt and what the line would be there. And I think Missouri, they're not those teams, but they're really not that far behind. if you look at the numbers. So I think I would take Vanderbilt, or I would take Missouri at anything below 24, I think, in this game.
Taking a look at a couple more games here. Florida, South Carolina. Does Helsinki come back and lead South Carolina to two upsets in a row, or does that run dry and Florida rebounds off to that loss to LSU?
Yeah, I think this is probably, at least on the spread, probably the stay-away game of the year to me in the SEC.
Yeah,
you look at Florida, they are off games against Auburn and LSU. This is a back-to-back road game for them. They could be without their two starting defensive ends, and one of them is looking like an All-American pass rusher they could do without. And then they got Georgia next week, so it's a horrible schedule spot for Florida. And then you look at South Carolina, and they got extremely lucky to beat Georgia last week. I think they had a post-game win expectancy, if you look at the stats, of 8%. They scored 10 points on offense in regulation. And if you look at the last time that Helsinki was actually playing where he was at less than 100%, I believe it was the Missouri game where they lost 34-14. So he has not shown that when he's banged up that he can play as well as when he's healthy. So I think this is a total stay away unless you want to look at the under and just assume because of all the injuries and sort of the bad spots for both teams that maybe it'll be a sloppy game and maybe they just won't score very many points.
What's an SEC game you're looking at, and in your mind you're like, all right, this is what I'm rolling with? You know, not potentially like a lock of the week, but one that you're like, okay, this is good stuff, besides Missouri-Vanderbilt.
Yeah, it's really tough in the SEC this week. I heard you guys talking a little bit about Alabama-Tennessee. I did take some Tennessee. It was plus 37.5 on Sunday, and I took that for a small amount.
Wow.
I think the problem with betting on any Alabama game, at least especially once the line's sort of been hammered into place, is if you look at like how the results for Alabama have played out this season against the spread, the actual result has come within 4.5, 3, 2.5, 5, 10, and 2 points. So, and Alabama is 3-3 in terms of covering in those games. So essentially, if you bet on an Alabama game this year, the lines are so good, you're essentially just flipping a coin with third-string guys and late in the fourth quarter and who's going to score. But, you know, I think the other thing is everyone talks about how Alabama's defense is not as good this year. And I think while that's sort of true from a 10,000-foot level, I think the thing people don't specify is actually the secondary is way better than it was last year and is playing lights out. It's the front seven, especially against the run, where they have issues. And Tennessee at 4.0 yards per carry and with that offensive line is last in the SEC so in running the ball. So, you know, they do have some receivers that can make some plays, but I'm not expecting much from Tennessee. I just don't think it's a great matchup for them. But I do think just Nick Saban and these huge spread games, if it goes back above, you know, 5 touchdowns, I think there's at least a little bit of value on Tennessee there.
If you're crossing over, give me one or two more games. Give me one in college football and one in the NFL that we need to pay attention to Saturday and Sunday.
Yep. I would say in college, one of my favorite bets is going to be Boise State minus 6.5 at BYU, and that may be up to 7 now. It was kind of teetering earlier today. I like it either way. You know, Boise State, the reason that it's not even higher is because their freshman quarterback, who's been really sensational, has been banged up and is questionable for this game. Well, Boise State's backup is actually really, really good. He played great last Saturday, whereas BYU lost Tyson Williams, their starting running back, and also they lost, I believe it's Zach Hill, who is their sophomore quarterback, who's been really, really good. They're both out for the season. And, you know, Boise State just has so much more depth. Those injuries to BYU are just huge. And without their quarterback and their running back, they're not going to be able to move the ball on a defensive line that's actually probably top 10 to 15 in the country, including Power 5 teams. So I expect Boise State's defensive line to just dominate there in that game and for them to run away with it. And in the NFL, I think tonight actually presents a pretty good spot on the under. In the Denver game tonight, And I think the public is sort of drooling over the fact that they can get Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes, you know, at just minus three in a game. But, you know, Denver's defense has been playing outstanding. Kansas City's only scored 37 points in the last two games. And Kansas City's defense is another defense that can get run on pretty well. And I expect the Broncos to do that and shorten the game. If you can get under 49 tonight in that one, I think that's a pretty juicy spot.
Christopher Smith, my man, tell everybody what's going on in my bookie. Are we still doubling down here? What kind of contest? Anything else going on?
Yeah, so I asked my guys, you know, because we run the social media accounts and stuff like that, like, how much longer are we going on this 100%, you know, match your deposit stuff? And they said they're looking at it right now, and they're deciding when it's going to end. So as far as I know, it's still open today, but I would be surprised if it's open beyond a few more days. So definitely get your deposits in now if you haven't yet. And I think we're also calling this time of the year super season for sports betting, just because, you know, you got Major League Baseball playoffs, NHL started, NBA starting, college basketball's coming up, college football, NFL, like, you know, NASCAR, golf, tennis, any sport that you can imagine, it's happening right now. So if you like betting, if you don't like, you know, betting on something now, then you probably just will not ever want to bet on sports.
That's fantastic stuff. Christopher, man, have a great weekend. Good betting to you. Appreciate you coming on, presented by MyBookie.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thanks, buddy. Christopher Smith, always a fun guy. Always, you know, most of the time knows what he's talking about and has some good parlays and good bets. And it's one thing I want to do. I've never done a parlay before. I don't know. Just feel the need to do one day. I just want to pick like seven college football games that I know that I think could win. And just make a roll. Maybe the state of Tennessee will approve it one day where I can just go down the road and maybe place a bet. Does Cherokee Casino open? They have a sports book yet?
I have no idea.
They're open. I don't know if they have a sports
book. I know. Yeah. I don't know. We'll find out. I'm going to look up that during the break. Talk about that. Talk about some more crazy stuff on the other side. We're rolling along. It's The Drive on Fox Sports Knoxville. Oh, we're The Drive. It's Fox Sports Knoxville. Hope everybody is getting on their way home, getting safe. Drive slow. I was reading a story last night. A big hauler, NASCAR hauler, Davey and Bear, that you're usually carrying two expensive cars. They're going to a track. Usually you carry two cars, go to a track. You got your first one, and you got a backup car. And yesterday, Ross Chastain's hauler, unfortunately, the driver, usually you're driving with two guys using the hauler. And the guy that was driving the hauler had a medical incident, lost control. The guy that was on the bunks tried to jump up, grab control as quick as possible, couldn't. The hauler unhicked from the truck,
yeah,
rolled down the 60-foot embankment. The truck came to a stop, you know, after it rolled over twice. They're fine. The drivers are fine. But they lost about $1.8 million worth of inventory yesterday alone in one wreck. And it was Ross Chastain, Bear. That's a lot.
Better hope he had insurance.
Well, the problem is that's what Nick was talking about. Nick's going to the track to see how they're going to put together enough parts, engines, and car to get two cars on the track this weekend. Like, that's the big thing. So they've got insurance, definitely. But you've seen this a couple times now where these haulers get in accidents, and it's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of money driving in the back of those things.
Well, more than the money is they spend months prepping certain cars for certain tracks. So,
and I couldn't imagine if it was like a Dega car or something where they'd spent, you know,
a year in a wind tunnel.
Right. Each week is different. Like this week, they're going to Kansas, you know, so it's different. But that was crazy. So we'll, you know, I don't know. Hope everybody's good, and we'll keep thinking of them. Tennessee football, they'll take off tomorrow. I found this interesting because I kind of wanted to know. Tennessee football is not going to be playing until 8 o'clock Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, which means, you know, if they were to fly down tomorrow, okay, where you're going through pregame, all that stuff, you're doing all your stuff the night before, meetings, all that. Well, hell, you're waking up 7, 8 o'clock. What in God's name are you going to do for 10 hours, you know, until you're waiting? and you're just waiting and waiting and waiting and sitting around. And
I let them sleep in.
What's is it? I don't see. My thing is like,
I go down there the day of the game.
That's what I was. Yeah, exactly. Like, would it be interesting if Tennessee said, "Screw it, we'll have a walkthrough Saturday morning. We'll fly down, you know, about noon, 1 o'clock. Have ourselves a hotel near the stadium." To be able to get ready, get everybody, you know, psyched up, take a little cat nap if you want to, and then we'll go. I just find this kind of weird. And I know they have to go through a walkthrough, too. Usually you go through a walkthrough if they stay in the night before. But this is like a completely different circumstance because technically they're going to be playing at 9, Tennessee player time.
Yeah.
So the reason they're doing it is because Alabama threw their weight around. They want to try out their stupid new lights.
Well, that's the only way they could have got on was to play that late on ESPN. They couldn't have taken up the 7 o'clock slot because somebody else is on. I think Kentucky, Georgia is on during that time. I think it's somebody like that. So Alabama had to, they didn't want to play the afternoon game. So they went to ESPN and were like, hey, why don't you let us play at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. So it puts it now in a weird, I don't know when the last time Tennessee's played a game that late. That's what I'm getting at. So I'm thinking,
UCLA back in the late 80s would kick off at 10 o'clock.
I think they had a game in the middle of the 2000s that kicked off that late.
Arkansas?
No, I thought it was a one of the West games against either UCLA or California.
Oh, would it, have been it may have been Cal Oregon? The year when the people were living in the trees.
Yeah, Berkeley. That was a night game, actually. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was that late, but...
But think, I mean, but you have to really.
Is that on Labor Day?
Dig into that. Yeah. I think it, it was the first game of the year. But, like, why would it be smart for Tennessee to hop a plane Saturday morning after you walk through the facility and just go down there? You get off the bus. It's only a 45-minute plane ride, if that.
Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, if that. If that.
Just get off the plane, go to the.
Get off the plane, get your ass on the bus, go play football.
I mean, it would be smarter, but I get that.
Let them sleep in Knoxville.
This football, the guys in the office, they're setting these things up years in advance as far as getting these hotels in.
Well, you already got them booked. I mean, you've got them booked. But I don't know. This ain't happened before in a while. So that's why I find it kind of interesting where Tennessee's playing a 9 o'clock game, but they're going to travel down Friday afternoon, go do a walkthrough. They'll go see a movie tomorrow night. They'll do something team building wise. They'll go see a movie tomorrow night or do something in-house. And they'll do it in Birmingham. They're not going to stay in Tuscaloosa. I can promise you that. Probably going to stay on the outskirts. Not going to stay in Tuscaloosa, I wouldn't think. And then they'll wait. Let's see. Tennessee starts their Vol walk technically at a visitor stadium 2.5 hours before the game starts. So 6:30. So pretty much they're going to be sitting around from whenever they wake up, 8 or 9 o'clock, to about 5 o'clock with nothing to do. About 10 hours. How's that mess with you mentally? Alabama players get to hang out. You know,
They're used good. To their facility at that point, like as far as what they're going to be doing, just hanging around the dorms or whatever.
Just hanging around the dorms.
I don't know. It's part of it.
I get that it's part of it. No, I mean, I completely get it. I'm just wondering.
They're going to play Settlers of Catan like the basketball team does? Is that a thing we can get the football team hooked on?
I don't know if we can get them hooked on the Settlers of Catan. But isn't it interesting, though? It's just like when you really look at it, there's a lot of stuff that goes into game day prep. Food being cooked, nutritionists that are there, the travel squad, the planes, the buses, security, state troopers, Pruitt. And here's what's going to happen. Jeremy Pruitt and staff, well, I'm going to go ahead and tell you this, what's going to happen. Tomorrow night, Tennessee coaches are going to spread out in the state of Alabama. I know of a couple that are going to be in the mid-state of Alabama catching up with some high school football. I know Jeremy Pruitt's going to go see some ball tomorrow night. And that is the one positive out of this, that you're not waking up and have a 12 o'clock game. You can go hit up these high schools, not stay for a quarter, then have to leave. go find some of the best players you think are on your radar. And even if a guy has to go down to Mobile and see a player, you're 3 hours away. You can make it back. Like I'm saying, I think they're going to spread out tomorrow. I know for a fact a couple of them are. But maybe that's a good thing for the staff. I mean, it sucks for the team.
Well, I mean, right now you're 11th in the SEC for recruiting. So, yeah, they probably need to be hitting the trail.
Damn well better go do something. I don't know, man. You go to Philadelphia, Mississippi. Philadelphia, Mississippi is 45 minutes away from Tuscaloosa. And you just roll up in there, and there's two casinos. You literally, you go through a stoplight, and all of a sudden, it looks like you're in Reno. Like, there's just two casinos across the street from each other. You're like, where the hell did these come from? It just comes out of nowhere. It's pretty awesome, not going to lie. Visited there a couple times when I was in college, Tuscaloosa. It's a neat spot. Giving people ideas.
In Tuscaloosa?
Yeah. Yeah, we... Where you going, Bear?
I mean, Dreamland Barbecue sucks.
Do you really say that? You're saying that just because you're
Dreamland's pretty damn good.
I've
had it. It's absolute garbage compared to Tennessee Barbecue. I mean, it's just not very good. I just didn't like it. I didn't see what the big deal about it was. It's, you know, I'm sorry.
No, I think the Brick Pit, that was one in Deep South, was better than Dreamland. But Dreamland's got some good stuff. The baked beans are good. The bread that comes with the ribs. Banana pudding. I don't eat banana pudding. I've heard it's good.
Why do you hate Jesus in America, Trey?
I don't know. I just don't eat banana pudding.
Do you eat bananas?
Every now and then, yeah. I'm more of an apple, oranges. I just don't like banana. I don't like the smell. I don't like that. No, I just do apples, oranges, grapes. Cantaloupes are really good. I love cantaloupe.
I don't get on people for being too picky. I mean, I don't eat cheese, so I get a lot of flack for that.
That is the weirdest thing I've never understood. And it's not like a medical thing, right? You just don't like cheese.
I am no longer lactose intolerant. That is correct.
You were at one time.
Yes.
You were healed by Benny Hinn.
Well, like, I mean, no, like there's a lot of allergies that people grow out of. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So you just got used to not – you've never really had cheese, so you just never developed
a taste for it.
No, there
was a time period where I ate it.
And you liked it?
I don't know if I liked it or if I was just like, oh, this is food. I guess I need to eat.
So, like, what do you do if you're getting a pizza?
Order it without cheese. I don't really like dairy.
Wait, what? How the hell do you do that?
Yeah, you just tell them you want to – that's like, all right, so, like, let's say I'm calling in a pizza, and I just tell them, hey, make sure there's no cheese. What I want to do, since there is no cheese, is add extra sauce, and then I'll get, like, make pepperoni, bacon, sometimes add a couple of other toppings. But just make sure you don't want to do it with thin crust because that'll just taste bad. But you just get, like, a hand-tossed style dough, and it's just kind of like a
– What about a quesadilla? The cheese is the glue that holds everything together.
I don't eat quesadillas.
Wait, what? So what?
We better grilled cheese sandwich.
You just eat the sauce. Eat the sauce and the bread
with like
and
meat
the toppings.
Meat vegetables. That are toppings. Yeah, it's pretty good. Don't knock it until you try it.
No, I'm not knocking. I'm just no.
I tried it, but toppings
right
fell off in my lap when I tried it. They just fall off the cheese.
Seems like a you problem. That seems user error on that end. I've never had that happen where the toppings are just falling off.
Sounds like a personal problem.
I don't like milk either. So.
Wait, what?
I drink chocolate milk, but like.
Then you like
regular
milk.
Whole milk. See, I won't drink it. It's like the smell of it just makes.
Damn! Yeah. What else are you not into? Do you like crabs and seafood?
Yeah, I love seafood. Huge on seafood. I'm not big on noodles either.
Really?
Yeah.
So how'd you get through college then? Ramen not available?
You just meal prep. You can eat for about $40 a week doing that.
It's probably cheaper without the cheese and dairy. Dairy's
it's healthier too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that.
It's
I'm
not
just
normal
the
to drink
wise.
Another species of animal's milk.
What do you drink milk? What are you talking about?
No, I very rarely drink milk.
Stop it.
I mean, I eat cheese like crazy, but I don't. As I've gotten older, I just don't drink milk.
Like a lot of people think like the calcium helps build strong bones, but that's not actually true.
Really?
So Tony the Tiger has been freaking lying to me for 20 years.
Tony's been on the drink your milk kind
of
thing?
That's a load of crap. Yeah, milk with your Frosted Flakes. They're great. Vitamins. Build your bones.
Do some. Yeah, I mean, feel free, everyone. Go out there, do some research. Milk's not actually going to help you build stronger bones.
So drink orange juice?
I mean, that's not going to help, but I mean, like, I guess that grape vitamin juice. C, the vitamin C will help your immune system, which might not be the worst thing for you right now.
Unless you're squeezing it fresh, you don't want to know how long that orange juice has been in a stainless steel tank somewhere in Florida.
This has been Lessons with Davey, brought to you by whoever the hell out there wants to sponsor it. We'll be back on the other side. It's The Drive. We're rolling on Fox Sports Knoxville. Back on The Drive, Fox Sports Knoxville. Bear, Davey, myself hanging out today. Russ will be back tomorrow. Struggling, but making things happen here. Yeah, I was watching the other night. I got my dad into Last Chance U, and he was like, "Damn, you know, that's a graphic coach." You know what I mean? Like, very. I can't use the words that he was saying, but very uptight. Now you look at the players that have come out. Jason Brown. I was reading an article the other day. He's about to go to jail. Like, his ass is about to be.
Jason Brown is?
Yeah, dude, he got indicted.
What?
A bunch of corruption charges, mail fraud, wire fraud. And it's interesting because I read the article. They're going to Compton, California, to film the next Last Chance U. And I have to think now, there's so many different. Netflix has bought into so many different type of shows. They've got QB1. They've got All American. They got Last Chance U. And then I took a look. Did you see, have you watched any of HBO's new documentaries about college football yet?
No, I haven't seen any of the HBO's.
See, you've got to watch it. Okay. You need to watch one because they did it on four teams, Washington State, Arizona State, Penn State, and Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I'm as big as a Mike Leach stan as you'll find out there. But, I need to to get that.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. I was pretty anti-Leach during the turmoil.
I'm a huge Mike Leach fan.
They didn't do much to make it feel like Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
But it was neat getting behind-the-scenes look. The Penn State one was good. I haven't watched Washington State. No, I haven't watched Arizona State yet. But I'd be interested to see HBO go full season with somebody.
Well, we've talked about that before. It's like whoever is not trying to have a – we could call it as the T turns, which is the drama that you consistently see, or the soap opera, if you want to call it that. That is Tennessee football. Like, I mean, somebody's missing out on a lot of money. You consistently see how there's just something pop up out of the blue. And
Pruitt,
I mean,
I follow him around.
Oh no, not at all. But that's one of the things I wanted to see about the Mike Leach, because I feel like he would be open to showing a lot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know a lot of people don't like his antics that you consider off camera, while he's on camera off the field. But I mean, if there's one guy who's able to take less and do more with it,
agreed,
it's him. And that's the thing. It's like, a lot of people probably won't like me saying this, but I think you're going to really struggle to out recruit the Alabamas, the Georgias, and the Floridas of the world, just simply based off them having more talent in their backyard. I know Tennessee, the amount of talent you have within your own state is growing, and you can still go out and get quality talent at some of these other places. But we always say Tennessee would recruit itself, so I don't think it would be on Leach to have to be the elite recruiter that you see, like Nick Saban constantly getting guys in and Kirby Smart. And so whenever you're able to scheme up against these SEC opponents you have to play, I feel like, I mean, Mike Leach has proven he does that. Granted, he dropped a good game here and there that he shouldn't, but he at least often surprises people.
I watched James Franklin, the Penn State one, on HBO. I've been a James Franklin fan since he was at Vanderbilt. First off, he was always nice to me when I was, you know, down there. I was covering the SECs. Every now and then I'd go over there and talk to James and have conversations. And if I ever needed anything, he was there to help. And you could tell, you know, coming from Maryland, go to Vanderbilt, he's trying to build up something, and he did
at
Vanderbilt. But I'm trying to figure out if he had to go take over an SEC school, which SEC school would be best for him to take over? Somewhere like Auburn or somewhere a little bit more of a city, per se, or closer?
See, like I don't think he wants to come back to the SEC.
No, and I don't blame you, but if, I mean,
I expect him to actually be the next head coach at the University of Southern California if Urban Meyer does not take the job.
God, that'd be badass.
Who's that?
I'd be so down for it, man. James Franklin.
Nah, he's a Pennsylvania guy.
I hear he wants out.
Yeah.
Really?
Southern Cal's not a job you turn down.
I mean, but if that president is saying she doesn't want to go anywhere near Urban Meyer, I doubt she's going to want to get, would be willing to roll over for and take Franklin out there.
Why, though?
That's like apples and oranges, man.
Really?
Yeah.
That I mean,
he's got three former players, but spending the rest of their lives in prison.
Yeah, but that's
you can't sugarcoat it, Trey. You cannot sugarcoat it. He was ass deep, and that was lucky he didn't get called and put under oath. I don't know. I think he's a scumbag of scumbags. I just doubt. I mean, the way she was acting about hiring Urban Meyer. I mean, I may be wrong. USC's proving that they don't care.
There was. If James Franklin was fully involved or anything with what went on at Vanderbilt, a school like Penn State coming off something like they were coming off of would not have hired James Franklin.
I think that's a good point.
They would have not. They wouldn't have touched him. But he was their first choice. I mean, I remember the whole thing.
I'd have to go look at the timeline. I know the trial, the Vandenberg trial hadn't started by the time he got that job. Yeah, he was already at Penn State, wasn't he?
No. Well, he got the call about what was going on, and
Bill O'Brien was getting ready to go to Houston.
Right, so it all unfolded. It's not like he got look. He'd have been fine to stay on as the head coach of Vanderbilt when all that stuff was going on. Anyways, I mean, those were just three sick kids. I'm sorry. I mean,
well, I'm not arguing there, but he was made. He knew what had happened.
Well, every head coach is going to know what happened. I mean, it's not like. If you're trying to insinuate that he was trying to hide something or cover things up, I don't think he was thinking like that. It's just that case, man, living in Nashville during that time when that case was going on, man, there are so many misdirections by the defense and by the prosecutors that, man, you didn't know which way to look. You know, the retrial and all that stuff too. Like, it was interesting to me how that went down. And you know, Franklin was a coach, but I will say this, and I continue to say it.
Well, I mean, about how what went down?
Well, just because Vanderbilt, you know, that the victim had to go through it.
Oh, yeah.
Three different times.
Okay.
But then also, you know, Vanderbilt had to go back through it like a second time when it comes to the jury because of, I'm just saying, it was such a weird trial in Nashville, and there were so many players involved. And I'm only talking about three or four, but I'm saying the case as a whole really shook Nashville and shook Vanderbilt. And that's why I don't think they have taken football seriously at Vanderbilt for the last 4 to 5 years
because of such a stain that
put on that university as a whole. And I think Vanderbilt, I know we have to take a break. I think Vanderbilt administrators saw that. They were like, screw you, Vanderbilt. We are a higher education university, and you just pulled us through the mud like this. Back your ass up for a little bit and want anything football-wise. So we'll talk about that. We'll wrap up the show coming up next. We've been rolling here. It's The Drive on Fox Sports Knoxville. Davey, ask that question.
I think T-Cart mentioned it during his call earlier. Yeah. I know we had to get back to the phone line. Yeah. Are you starting Brian Maurer this Saturday in Tuscaloosa? Bear, I know you're of the mindset of, yeah, go ahead and play him. I personally, like, I mean,
go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I joke around a lot about against games like these, you might as well just play your JV squad because you know you don't have a chance when you start it. And I kind of look at it as you've typically in years past had what we call, like, the stretch of death.
Yep.
And so, obviously, you know, like, the goal is to get on some momentum in the second half of the season and try to piece together some wins against teams that are not of the elite stature of your Georgias, your Floridas, and your Alabamas. And fortunately, this year, your West opponent was other West opponent that wasn't Alabama was lacking. Now, if Brian Maurer's 100% healthy, and I have no concerns about whether or not he's got anything nagging on him as far as an injury, yeah, go ahead and play him. But after you seeing him get pulled from, not pulled, but having to leave the last two games because of injuries for stuff that possibly could still be lingering, yeah. I don't risk it because I've said it time and time again. I really do feel that Pruitt needs to get 5 wins to show me that he's ever going to even be able to like reach 8 wins in a year here at Tennessee. Because if you can only get 4 wins against this schedule right now, you're not going to do anything long-term here. Like, I already know. People say, well, he's got to get his guys. And it's like, I don't believe in that. Good coaches are able to take what they have and work with it. And right now, I guess you could say like 5-7 is back on the table after you beat Mississippi State and you look at how bad Kentucky's been and how bad Vanderbilt's been. So fortunately, those teams are not looking good, so you're going to have some chances. So I'm not starting Maurer on the chance because if Maurer goes down, you're not getting 4 wins on the season.
if you're
having to start JG.
You're gonna have major problems with people not wanting to even come to games.
And so like people can say it's a beta move. But if you're Jeremy Pruitt and you're wanting to keep this job, you got to start putting some wins together. Because, like, granted, I think he will be the head coach starting next season. But if you're Philip Fulmer and let's say you only get one more win this season, like let's say UAB is the only other game you get, why would you have any hope that he's going to be able to turn it around? Like, you've already seen all of his coaching malpractice mistakes early on. It's not like he's learning on the job. He's regressing, if anything.
So you think if Tennessee craps a bed in the year, I think Jeremy Pruitt's here either way. Whatever they do, 2-10, whatever.
Yeah,
he's here next year.
There's no way he survives 2-10.
Yeah, he does.
There's no way
he can survive 2-10 making some changes to his staff.
Hey, did you get hot the last break? There's no way, Trey. There's no way they could trot that guy back out there next year. His seat would be a flaming inferno of napalm, nuclear napalm.
Probably so. Next year, getting rid of him's not going to do anything better. Who are you going to go get? Who are you going to get? Who would take this train wreck of a job?
Man, see, okay, that's one thing I will go up against real quick. I think there's a lot of people that would take the job, one, because you don't have the coaches that have that mindset of, I can't get it done. The guys that you're at least wanting to get feel confident in their ability to coach, to get guys they think are going to be able to be successful. And on top of that, and people look like we've just had like this current rotating door. I was like, granted, it's not been like it was when you had Fulmer and Majors here for like 40 years. It has been a lot of coaches, but I mean, people are like, you just fire a coach when things go wrong. It's like, held on to Butch for five years.
Butch 5 years. We gave Dooley 3, and he only deserved 2.
Yeah, but I think look at all the assistant coaches you're also bringing in, because here's my instance, too.
You can keep some of them. I'd keep Chaney. That was the biggest thing that Butch did that I'm frustrated about, is he let Jim Chaney and Sam Pittman go, and look at Sam Pittman now and what Jim Chaney was able to do. I mean, he did help get that team to the national championship.
But basically what I'm saying, if they go 2-10, it wouldn't shock me at all if they decide to go the Ohio State route and name T interim head coach for a year and try and piecemeal together, keep most of the staff together.
Okay.
Give them a one-year tryout.
Well, the AD has to go too then. If Jeremy Pruitt goes, Phillip Fulmer's got to go too.
Nah.
I think you can go against that just because
he took it over. You don't let Phillip Fulmer make another hire?
Yeah, sure you would.
He made the hire.
Doesn't matter.
He could have taken his time. The excuse of, listen, look at what I had when I took it. Like, this was the best I was going to get. No other head coach wanted this job. Granted, Mike Leach did. I get that. But this is the argument he's going to make. He's like, I had to just go the coordinator route. I had to get somebody just to try to salvage what was left over because it was going down. And I'll say this on the final part. If you're a coach, you would probably love to come here because you know you're going to get a ton of buyout money if it doesn't work and you get fired.
Best sport of the day goes to Davey. Appreciate everybody joining us for Bear, for Davey. I'm Trey Russell. We'll be back tomorrow. We have been The Drive. Overtime coming up next on Fox Sports Knoxville.